Ralph found his breath and blew a series of short blasts. Piggy exclaimed, "There's one!" A child had appeared among the palms about 100 yards along the beach. He was a boy of perhaps 6 years, sturdy and fair, his clothes torn, his face covered with a sticky mass of fruit. His trousers had been lowered for an obvious purpose and had only been pulled back halfway. He jumped off the palm terrace into the sand and his trousers fell about his ankles. He stepped out of them and trotted to the platform. Piggy helped him up. Meanwhile, Ralph continued to blow till voices shouted in the forest. The small boy squatted in front of Ralph, looking up brightly and vertically. As he received the reassurance of something purposeful being done, he began to look satisfied, and his only clean digit, a pink thumb, slid into his mouth. Piggy leaned down to him. "What's your name?"
"Johnny."
Piggy muttered the name to himself and then shouted it to Ralph, who was not interested because he was still blowing. His face was dark with the violent pleasure of making this stupendous noise, and his heart was making the stretched shirt shake. The shouting in the forest was nearer. Signs of life were visible now on the beach. The sand, trembling beneath the heat haze, concealed many figures in its miles of length. Boys were making their way towards the platform through the hot, dumb sand. Three small children, no older than Johnny, appeared from startlingly close at hand where they had been gorging fruit in the forest. A dark little boy, not much younger than Piggy, parted a tangle of undergrowth, walked onto the platform and smiled cheerfully at everybody. More and more of them came. Taking their cue from the innocent Johnny, they sat down on the fallen palm trunks and waited. Ralph continued to blow short, penetrating blasts. Piggy moved among the crowd, asking names and frowning to remember them. The children gave him the same simple obedience that they had given to the men with megaphones. Some were naked and carrying their clothes, others half-naked or more or less dressed in school uniform, grey, blue, fawn, jacketed or jerseyed. There were badges, mottoes even, stripes of colour in stockings and pullovers. Their heads clustered above the trunks in the green shade. Heads brown, fair, black, chestnut, sandy, mouse-coloured. Heads muttering, whispering, heads full of eyes that watched Ralph and speculated. Something was being done. The children who came along the beach, singly or in twos, leapt into visibility when they crossed the line from heat haze to nearer sand. Here the eye was first attracted to a black, bat-like creature that danced on the sand and only later perceived the body above it. The bat was the child's shadow, shrunk by the vertical sun to a patch between the hurrying feet. Even while he blew, Ralph noticed the last pair of bodies that reached the platform above a fluttering patch of black. The two boys, bullet-headed and with hair like tow, flung themselves down and lay grinning and panting at Ralph like dogs. They were twins, and the eye was shocked and incredulous at such cheery duplication. They breathed together, they grinned together, they were chunky and vital. They raised wet lips at Ralph, for they seemed provided with not quite enough skin, so that their profiles were blurred and their mouths pulled open. Piggy bent his flashing glasses to them and could be heard between the blasts repeating their name, Sam, Eric, Sam, Eric. Then he got muddled. The twins shook their heads and pointed at each other, and the crowd laughed. At last Ralph ceased to blow and sat there, the conch trailing from one hand, his head bowed on his knees. As the echoes died away, so did the laughter, and there was silence. Within the diamond haze of the beach, something dark was fumbling along. Ralph saw it first, and watched till the intentness of his gaze drew all eyes that way. Then the creature stepped from mirage onto clear sand, and they saw that the darkness was not all shadow, but mostly clothing. The creature was a party of boys, marching approximately in step in two parallel lines and dressed in strangely eccentric clothing. Shorts, shirts, and different garments they carried in their hands, but each boy wore a square black cap with a silver badge in it. Their bodies, from throat to ankle, were hidden by black cloaks which bore a long silver cross on the left breast, and each neck was finished off with a ham-bone frill. The heat of the tropics, the descent, the search for food, and now this sweaty march along the blazing beach, had given them the complexion of newly washed plums. The boy who controlled them was dressed in the same way, though his cap badge was golden. When his party was about 10 yards from the platform, he shouted an order and they halted, gasping, sweating, swaying in the fierce light. The boy himself came forward, vaulted onto the platform with his cloak flying, and peered into what to him was almost complete darkness. "Where's the man with the trumpet?" Ralph, sensing his son blindness, answered him, "There's no man with a trumpet, only me." The boy came close and peered down at Ralph, screwing up his face as he did so. What he saw of the fair-haired boy with a creamy shell on his knees did not seem to satisfy him. He turned quickly, his black cloak circling. "Isn't there a ship, then?" Inside the floating cloak, he was tall, thin, and bony, and his hair was red beneath the black cap. His face was crumpled and freckled and ugly without silliness. Out of his face stared two light blue eyes, frustrated now and turning, or ready to turn, to anger. "Isn't there a man here?" Ralph spoke to his back. "No, we're having a meeting. Come and join in." The group of cloaked boys began to scatter from close line. The tall boy shouted them, "Choir, stand still!" Wearily obedient, the choir huddled into line and stood there, swaying in the sun. Nonetheless, some began to protest, faintly. "But Meridew, please, Meridew, can't we?" Then one of the boys flopped on his face in the sand, and the line broke up. They heaved the fallen boy to the platform and let him lie. Meridew, his eyes staring, made the best of a bad job. "All right, then, sit down, let him alone." "But Meridew..." "He's always throwing a feint," said Meridew. "He did it in Jib and Addis, and at matins over the precentor." This last piece of shop brought sniggers from the choir, who perched like blackbirds on the criss-cross trunks and examined Ralph with interest.